Hi there. Welcome to the From Lab to Launch podcast by Qualio, where we share inspiring stories from the people on the front lines of life sciences. Tune in and leave inspired to bring your life-saving products to the world.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining the show today. I'm Kelly from Qualio, and I'm your host here at From Lab to Launch. We hope you enjoy the conversations on the show as much as we do. We'd love a quick review of the show on Apple or Spotify. It takes just a minute and helps get the message out there. And if you want to be on the show, fill out the application linked in the show notes. We've had a lot of people reach out, and it's been a pleasure connecting with you all. The regulatory landscape is growing increasingly complex. We've got new European Union medical device regulations, in vitro diagnostic regulations in play. In fact, research from MedTech Europe predicts that as many as 76% of products will be withdrawn from the market as a result. And the complexity isn't limited to just our friends in Europe. The US, Australia, Canada, China, and many more countries are adapting their regulatory approach. The only thing that doesn't change is change itself, true of life and regulatory. Today, we're going deeper into how to monetize regulatory affairs, specifically for medtech. James Janoutsis is the founder and president of RIMSIS, a regulatory information management platform that centralizes regulatory activities in the cloud. From product documentation to streamlined submissions to monitoring market status, RIMSIS can save regulatory affairs teams hours and hours. Any life sciences founder listening in can learn from James' experience, jumping into entrepreneurship from his career in quality and regulatory, and how to get to market faster utilizing digital technologies. We'll get more about James' story and RIMSIS right now. Let's bring him in. Hi, James. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
To get us started, tell us a little bit about how RIMSIS started and what you do today.
Well, it really started with myself and spanned a medtech regulatory and quality career of about 16 years. So I started my career really with Philips Healthcare, a large multinational medtech corporation, and then went on to many small, medium-sized medical device companies throughout the Pittsburgh area. And so I've really had the full gamut of risk device classifications under my belt, all the way from soothing pacifiers, all the way from to internal surgical sealants and adhesives. And so, which are class three, by the way. And so really the full gamut in terms of electromechanical devices to implantables, to even bone putty that's made from plasma. So it was a combination product that was here in the US, a medical device, but in the EU, it was a combination product. And so throughout that career, there was really a lot of unknown around where products were registered globally for each of those companies. And when I say unknown, I mean that literally, because a lot of these companies manage their regulatory products on a color-coded Excel spreadsheet with, yep, you know, all the SKUs down one column and then all the countries across the columns, right? And everything in between for expiry dates and making sure that they have proper linkages to tech files and things of that nature, right? And it really came to light when we acquired products from Philips, and about 50% of those products were wrong of where they were marketed globally. And so from a due diligence standpoint, it seemed like that was an overlooked type of a due diligence factor whenever we were bringing up that business partnership. And from there, I was really looking for a solution that existed in the marketplace. And really there wasn't a solution that existed specific for medtech. And so a lot of the pharmaceutical industry, a lot of the pharmaceutical companies have had their day with RIM, and now it's really the spotlight is on medtech to help manage from a regulatory compliance standpoint and market standpoint, all of their products globally. And that's where RIMSIS comes in.
Nice. Yeah. I can remember trying to keep track on those spreadsheets myself as a quality engineer trying to approve changes, and then yes, you find the spreadsheet. Is it the right version? Oh my gosh. Wow. All right. Well, so tell us a little bit about your observations so far in industry with the EU MDR and IVDR updates.
Yeah,
because it's a whole new level of complexity, right?
It is. It's a complete nightmare scenario for industry. And what I mean by that is certainly there's a lot of benefit from a regulatory requirement standpoint, patient safety, you know, risk mitigation standpoint that these regulations have in order to enter into the EU from a regulation standpoint. But what we're seeing from an industry standpoint is there's still a lot of confusion around how to interpret these regulations, what is actually out of compliance or not a non-compliance issue. And it seems that industry and, you know, notified bodies and the regulators themselves are learning along the way. And we're kind of leaning on each other to say, hey, does this sound right? Is this the way that we properly interpret this? And it's an interesting scenario because we're all in the same ship, sailing in the same direction, but we all have different opinions of how these are supposed to be interpreted. And so really at the end of the day, you know, these regulations are, from the EU perspective, are really the benchmark and the baseline of getting into other countries as well. And so what we're finding is that as these regulations come into play, all of the medical device manufacturers, you know, medical device, software, in vitro diagnostic, are lagging behind where they should actually be in complying with these regulations. And a big part of that is, you know, making sure all the technical files are updated to the latest MDR and IVDR based on the MDD or the I, making sure that from an MDSAP standpoint, you have proper, even though the EU is not part, technically not part of the MDSAP program, you still have to comply globally with those, right? And there's just a lot of nuances with UDI and some of the other items that are coming down the pipeline here shortly that industry is still preparing for. And quite literally, regulators in the EU are still changing and trying to find the right path forward. So it's an interesting time for everybody, I think, in the industry. And we're all trying to do the best we can, but it's certainly a challenge when things are, you know, changing on the fly a little bit.
Definitely. I know. And you know, I think personal experience, we were helping a customer get ready to do their tech file under MDR, assuming everything was going to go into effect. And then they delayed it going into effect, but they still needed to get to market. So we had to rework everything to get them under MDD. And we slid in under that extended deadline. But now they have to go back and do it all over again.
Do it all again.
Up to MDR. And then it was, are we sure they're going to implement or not? The moving target there certainly doesn't facilitate any sort of ease of implementation. Well, to talk a little bit more on the RIMSIS side, nice job securing fundraising with your Series A recently. What advice would you have for other founders on fundraising from your experience?
Sure. Yeah, the fundraising aspect of things was definitely a skill set that I don't think anybody is prepared for whenever they go into fundraising. It is something that you get a lot of black eyes. You get a lot of, you take a lot of swings and you miss a lot and you're kind of hoping to land a couple here and there, right? And so from a fundraising standpoint, it was certainly interesting because we really went out earlier in the fundraising series, you know, seed series, where we went out to 75 different investors. And, you know, there's a lot of people that say no, and there's various reasons for saying no. And what we primarily understood was that these investors just didn't understand medtech. And it was interesting because a lot of the VCs and investors do not understand the industry, even though they claim that they do. They understand it from, you know, investing in medical devices themselves, from that standpoint, a potential market benefit and patient benefit from that matter. But as an industry as a whole, it's kind of a gray area. It's hard to get some data, some real concrete data on it. And from that matter, it's hard to have that compelling outlook from the type of solution that we're, you know, or problem we're trying to solve with RIMSIS. And so I would say, as we went out and, you know, got our seed round, we then, you know, limited our search quite significantly of who do we really want to partner with as an investor, as a partner to help us leverage, you know, their network and help understand, you know, how they can help us really, really gain traction in the market and based on their knowledge and maybe some of their existing company portfolios that might be a benefit with us. And so really it came down to Bessemer as being the fundamental strategic partner that we were looking for from day one. And everything just aligned from that point forward. It was something that we specifically sought them out. They kind of sought us out a little bit, and it was certainly a marriage meant to be, which is fantastic. And in terms of just some of the things that I would, you know, lessons learned, I would say that, you know, I would very much, looking back on things, I would very much kind of take the time to box in who I want as a strategic partner rather than just kind of a spray, you know, it was kind of spraying everywhere, just kind of seeing who's gonna you know, take the bait, if you will. But really understanding the VC culture and knowing that they have a very specific box that they invest in. And if you don't match that specific criteria, they're not going to invest no matter how hard you try. It's they have certain theses and information that they need to take back to their board, to their committee, and make sure that it fits their portfolio and their strategic vision. And many times they'll take these meetings because they want to learn about the industry, and maybe it's a better fit for them at a later stage, which is always, you know, an opportunity down the road. But certainly if you're looking for very specific type of investors, I would say definitely take the time to do that research up front.
Certainly. Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting. There's some big parallels here to our story. Mm-hmm. I think the general public, they don't understand what it takes to get a product to market. You know, they just see, you know, it's, you know, this much money or this many people in the clinical trial, blah, blah, blah. I think some of those high level bullet points are very visible and quantifiable. But the underlying things, like regulatory affairs, like quality systems management, right? It's very parallel to our story. I think they aren't
absolutely
direct measures, right? We don't make the product, we make the product you make better, right? That old BASF commercial, mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite ways to characterize what quality assurance is. And we all certainly know when it fails, right? I would say the same thing's true of regulatory affairs. One of the biggest challenges I saw in my time in consulting to the startup space was poor regulatory strategy. You know, oh yeah, we'll just, you know, they make this series of assumptions that the regulators are going to be okay with X, Y, and Z. And no, we don't need to worry about that right now. They throw their application at the wall. They have investment money tied to milestones. And then everything gets shot down because the agency's like, wait a minute, we didn't do this. Or you said this, but you didn't characterize the interface or whatever, right? So it sounds like your platform kind of maybe better inform those regulatory strategies.
For sure. And I would echo that, you know, what you said is poor regulatory strategy is a deal breaker in a lot of things, right? Without it, I think there's a lot of assumptions that are made because, quite candidly, I think from a regulatory standpoint, you just don't know half the time because the regulations are so disparate. Each market has its own flavor of regulations and how to apply them and how to interpret them. And that's the real challenge right now with regulatory affairs is, you know, it's always been a critical department, a business process specifically for a medical device manufacturer. But what we're seeing with all these regulation changes, especially with the EU MDR and IVDR, is that regulatory affairs now has to see at the table. It is front and center that you cannot anymore ignore regulatory affairs. It has to be a strategic and systemic process throughout a medical device manufacturer's, you know, mission and getting products to market and keeping those products on market. Without it, those products are coming off the market guaranteed. You know, with EU MDR and IVDR, right? I mean, if a medical device manufacturer has 100,000 SKUs, they're literally going in and drawing a line through that 100,000 SKUs and saying, you know, we're getting rid of these 50,000 because we can no longer support it. And it's not just it doesn't make sense from a revenue investment standpoint anymore. And we're keeping these ones, right? So we talk about all these products coming off the market because of that. The other issue is that, you know, these registrations globally expire or there might be a renewal period. And if you do not renew at the right time before it expires, your markets are coming off your products are coming off the market, period. You know, we have one customer that they were using a color code Excel spreadsheet and they had an intern managing it. Unfortunately, that intern didn't see the expiry date on one of those registrations. And that company was out $4 million in revenue just from that one registration expiring. And so the ramifications from a revenue impact standpoint from a company is huge. But then also, you know, from a patient standpoint, those products are no longer available on the market. And it's certainly a very challenging time because of all these more administrative regulatory activities that are coming into play. It makes it challenging for the patients as well as for the medical device companies to you know, make a real business case to keep products on the market.
Yeah. And that's, I don't think people even, well, the funding considerations, the cash flow, all of those kinds of things, you know, these little mom and pop shops that have one or two products. I mean, that's the end of your organization if you suddenly are missing $4 million in revenue.
Absolutely.
Well, what benefits are you seeing with companies that take a more modern approach to these types of activities and monitoring then?
Yeah, so it's what we're seeing is astronomical. It's been such a great ride so far. And really, it's been a great ride for regulatory affairs because we have now a dedicated, you know, vertically built SaaS solution that's servicing specifically regulatory affairs for MedTech. And it doesn't sound really, you know, beautiful and compelling, but when you think about the underlying processes that we're making more efficient and consolidating from a cost reduction standpoint, from an efficiency standpoint of a medical device manufacturer, the implications are huge. And when I say that is, you know, we are bringing in documentation records from quality management systems, right? So we are actually integrating with EQMS providers such as, you know, Qualio or others to help manage the technical files and regulatory documentation that needs to be submitted to different regulatory agencies in different markets. And so our system actually, and it also integrates with PLM systems where we bring in the regulated products at the finished good level, right? We bring in the EQMS documentation and then we manage that, all those products, say 100,000 products or 10,000 or even 10 products into each and every single specific market and manage all of those expiry dates, types of registrations, versions of registrations, amendments, things of that nature that really was handled by, you know, Google Drive or OneDrive or Outlook reminders and things of that nature. And then we also back into the other systems such as ERPs for sales flags, for commercial distribution, for sales ordering processes so that if a product is not registered in the market, they can't sell, period, because of the way that we have our integration set up. And so it's a really nice consolidated solution that provides huge benefits, huge efficiencies, just in terms of visibility and maintenance and management of these, you know, regulatory technical files and documentation and information moving forward.
Wow. I was just thinking about the, you know, the flag back to the ERP, because that color coded spreadsheet that lives in, you know, SharePoint, yep. Right? The guys in the warehouse, they're shipping the product, don't check that spreadsheet. How do they, right? Like, you know, so yeah. Wow. This is amazing. I love it. Well, so you've been in the MedTech space for a while. What changes do you foresee in the coming years?
Yeah, a lot more digitalization for sure. I think is, you know, you yourselves, Qualio, is seeing that quite significantly, right?
Yep.
It's MedTech. It's always been a lagger in technology for some reason. Feels like we're always like 10 years behind everybody else from an industry standpoint. And we're always playing catch up. And I think a big part of that obviously is the quality side of things, right? Risk mitigation and things of that nature. There's just a reluctance to change what's working, but that's not always the best for business or for patients. And the fact that these regulations are now changing, and, you know, really the workforce is changing to more remote for that matter. It's just, it's a must have at this point, right? It is something that from a digital transformation standpoint needs to happen within companies. And what we're seeing more and more now is that these companies are coming to us to help them digitally transform their internal processes, to help them move forward and get ready for the next phase or you know, next 10 years. You know, also what I see is that regulatory affairs is also becoming a competitive advantage for companies. If you can get products to market faster and you can keep your products in market, that's a huge competitive advantage for your specific company. You know, take Philips, for instance, right? They just had a huge recall for their ventilators and now they have lost a significant market share, one of the biggest competitors. And there was just, you know, that was a quality related issue, but certainly anything registration or regulatory related would have the same impact or not. And so it's a matter of making sure that you have those processes in place today, that those are preventable in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. On a more personal note, if you could go back and tell yourself something at the start of your career, what would that be?
That's an interesting one, because I think what I would do is just hone in a little bit more on really what I wanted to do. And that's always easy to say in hindsight, but, you know, I started my career in quality and, you know, been a quality analyst, a quality engineer, quality manager, and then made the jump into regulatory, and then it was quality and regulatory. And I really found that I was really good at quality and wish I would have dedicated even more time to it and really focused and honed that skill. Because now I feel like I really do have that honed in skill, but I feel like I could have even went back and just said, hey, look, you know, I don't think anybody really goes to school for quality and regulatory.
No, we don't, do we?
You know, I feel like we're like the lost children that, you know, we kind of just find our way into it.
We do.
Because we find that we're really good at it, right? And then we get really passionate about it too. And there's certainly, I guess I would have let myself become, you know, let myself be that passionate about it back then, because I wasn't really quite sure I wanted to do it. And then, you know what? I was like, you know what? I'm really good at this and I really enjoy it and I'm making an impact and I'm working for medical device companies and I have to have this, you know, I'm ultimately helping patients at the end of the day, an amazing experience. And so I think just from that standpoint, just kind of letting it ride, if you will, I guess.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those career paths that you meander your way into. That's for sure.
Yes. And kind of figure out what story, start like, but... and then you find out, you know.
Exactly. I want to go work in the R&D for a while. You get over there. Oh my gosh, they have no rules here. I don't think I can do this. And then you go back to QA, right? Like,
yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thanks a bunch, James. Where can people go to learn more, follow along and connect with you?
Absolutely. So you can certainly visit our website at www.rimsys.io. Or, you know, I'm always available to talk shop. So feel free to connect to me on LinkedIn. I'm available all the time. I love talking shop, quality and regulatory.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of From Lab to Launch, brought to you by Qualio. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and give the show a positive review. It really helps us out. For more information about Qualio, our guest today, or to be a guest on a future episode, please refer to the show notes. Until next time.